Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go. We are live, ladies and gentlemen. It's your boy, Matthew Havens. You already know who it is on Real Talk Radio right now with this podcast. I'm joined here with my very, very close friend, practically my brother from another mother, Alex Hayes. How are you, sir?
I am doing fantastic, Mr. Havens.
It's been a great night.
What's this called? Real Talk Radio?
This is called Real Talk. So my podcast is called Real Talk. So basically it's no small talk.
Just real
just
talk.
Just deep talk with interesting human beings.
All right, well, if you want to get deep right off the bat, which do you think is more important, investing or saving?
Well, I think both are equally important, right? But I think you have to be able to save to invest. If you're just making money and everybody, the majority of people are still in a job, you know, right? Blessed that I'm not working for somebody else, which is incredible. But it's taking a lot of hard work to work for yourself. But you have to be able to save money first. And then once you have that chunk of change that you've allocated towards your nest egg or whatever you call it, then you can use that money in investments that are going to start paying you monthly, yearly, annually. So both are important, but I think you have to save before you can invest, right?
You know, I would agree with you. Earlier today, I was watching a podcast and...
Watching or listening?
It wasn't actually a podcast. It was Kinobody doing his YouTube thing. But he's telling
Greg.
He's like...
Shout out Kinobody.
Kinobody. Woo. It's like you have to make sure that you are saving something, because he's like, I see so many people who go paycheck to paycheck, and then life happens, you know, something happens, and they're screwed. They don't know what to do. You know, you're out, you lose your job, you're like, I don't have any kind of savings, I don't have anything to fall back on. Or even worse, they have an opportunity pop up that's like the golden opportunity that you need to take advantage of, and they can't because they don't have any kind of savings, they don't have any kind of backup money. So I would agree with you. It's very important to save before you invest. But I also wouldn't say, like, okay, here's a question for you. What would the rate, how much would you save before you invest?
Well,
like, percentage-wise, don't give me literal numbers.
The rule that I've been doing is percentage-wise is I would save 10%. When I used to work, I'd save 10% of every single paycheck, every single dollar that I received. 10% would just go straight into a stash of, you know, this is my investing stash.
When you used to work.
Right, when I used to work.
Get out of here. You always be hustling.
Always be hustling. That is copyright, Mr. Alexander Hayes. Always be hustling. And I love that phrase. It's been so great to realize that I don't have to work for somebody else.
Oh, it's
and, but
it's
when
nice.
I was, it was 10 or more. You set the percentage that you're allowed to allocate towards savings.
I'm currently working on a thirds program, and this is not like maybe this is like any other kind of third program you've heard of, but this I'm making
like 33%.
I'm making this up right now on the spot. So here's Alex Hayes's thirds program. You take one third, you put it towards investing. You take one third, you put it towards savings. You take one third and put it towards, you know, your normal operation
living
fund.
Yeah.
So the way that works for me is I make about $600 every 2 weeks with my little job. So I go $200 towards investing, $200 towards rent and savings, stuff like that, and then $200 towards play money. So that's how I'm allocating it. That's how I planned out to allocate it. And I think we're going to have some pretty good things going forward.
In the next few years, absolutely.
Woohoo!
This year, it's been a wild roller coaster right out of the gate, 2018.
Oh, boy, hasn't it been?
One third, one third, one third. I like that. It's pretty solid. But even if you can't, you know, the listeners that are in a tight spot, living those paychecks with paycheck, whatever you can, just allocate a percentage. 5%,
10%. Yeah, that's why I like the percentage system so much more, because it doesn't matter how much you're making. You know, if you got like $100 going on, 10% of $100 is $10, you know? So you throw that $10 wherever you need to throw that $10. So I love the percentage system so much more because it applies to so many more people as opposed to, you know, putting solid numbers on it where some people are like, oh, I can't make that kind of money.
I can't afford $500.
That's never going to happen, you know?
Absolutely.
So
and that's another thing. Robert Kiyosaki, right? Like, never, I never, ever say, I cannot afford something. I always say, how can I afford it? And that's another thing, if people are actually listening and they want to improve their life here. The listeners on Real Talk, don't ever say, never ever let your lips say these words again. I cannot afford something. I want you to change the mindset towards, how can I afford it?
Guys, that's so incredibly important. I can't pound into your brains enough how important it is to be focused on how can I afford X, Y, Z instead of just shutting it down, closing it off right off the bat. Because if you're in a mindset of constantly closing things off, constantly shutting things down, you know, constantly killing your own dreams, how are you ever going to get towards any kind of freedom? You know, how are you ever going to get towards any kind of, you know, get out of any kind of job, you know, anything like that, you know, move to make your dreams happen? You just can't if you're constantly shutting yourself down. So that's so, so, so important, Matt. You hit it on the head that you have to be all about making, how am I going to make this work, rather than just, oh, yeah, I can't afford that. Well, a lot of people can't afford stuff. You know, I didn't know how I was going to make it work, but I knew I had to. And so then it became a game of, how am I going to figure out how to do this? And, you know, I'm not perfect. I don't have any kind of, you know, big thing going on right now, but I do have a basic understanding and mindset and framework of money. Yeah. So
you said it right there, the mindset. I think that's the first step for anybody that wants to change their life.
I would agree.
You have to shift the mindset first, because anything in your life, think about it. Think about this. Anything in your life that you want to do starts with what?
Mindset.
Your mindset. You got to think before you can move.
You got to see it.
You got to see. Yeah. You got a vision ahead. Got to, like, oh, I'm going to call somebody. Well, you just thought of that first before you actually picked up your phone, dialed the numbers. It's all about the mindset first. You have to switch the mindset instead of lack. You know, you have to go into the abundance mindset.
I agree.
That's been a huge shift in my life. That's been a great mindset. Help. Abundance mindset. Abundance. Absolutely.
Abundance.
Abundance. That's what somebody told me one day. Like, they broke it down in that word and do abundance. And I was like, what? I just thought it was funny. Makes you remember it.
Abundance. Just, you got to be in the abundance mindset. So, okay, what about our listeners who are already in the abundance mindset? What is step two? I'm going to pose this to you. I think it's learn before you earn. I think step two, after you're in the abundance mindset, you have to learn about how you can earn before you can earn.
I would agree. You would have to learn how money works.
I mean, because
our system.
Because if we just rewind this back, Matt and I were in a little situation earlier this year where it was not a good situation. The company decided to close the door on us, basically. And so what did Matt do? It was incredible. He started learning, and he learned about every possible opportunity that was in the same kind of category of the company that closed the door on us. And we are now sitting on the point where we have 2, 3, 4 maybe companies.
Solid
companies. Because Matt put his head down and learned before he earned. And I just have to say thank you, Matt, for doing that, for putting your head down and putting your nose to the grindstone. And that's just
it took a lot. I mean, right as soon as that happened at the start of 2018, I said, okay, let's find some other opportunities and companies that are going to start to pay us monthly, weekly, daily, or whatever. And I learned about all these companies. I invested in a lot of companies, and I lost a lot of money in companies. But I found, like Alex said, three or four solid opportunities. And just like he said earlier, the opportunities are they're going to come your way. Are you going to be prepared to take advantage of those opportunities when they present themselves?
And to shuffle backward, you got to have some kind of savings, because if you can't, if these opportunities are smacking you in the face and you can't take advantage of them, that's really bad.
That may be even worse, because you're in a situation and you see a way out, but you can't act on that opportunity.
Now,
it sucks, man.
Now, I'd like to say something to anyone who's stuck in the situation of, oh no, I went too big too soon. I got into an apartment that I really can't afford. You know, I got this car payment that I really can't afford. Mm. You know, I've got this, whatever it might be, monthly payment that I really can't afford. And well, what do? I'm stuck in that paycheck to paycheck. There's no way to make it work. Well, most of the problem, I feel like, is you making that connection that, oh, hey, there's an issue here. I need to make some kind of a change. I need to work towards something. And I would challenge you to follow your daily routine and see if you can locate any excess money that's going out. Like, are you doing the $5 Starbucks run every day? Can you get by with just straight up black coffee that costs like way
stop
less money? You know,
stop with the Netflix. Stop with the monthly subscriptions and all that stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah, I challenge you to take a good look at all of your outgoing expenses. And I'm guessing that you're not actually in a situation where you're so locked in. You've just kind of gotten that way out of comfort. And it sucks. Don't get me wrong. It sucks to have to cut back. It's the hardest thing in the world. You know, I'm in a situation right now where come September, I'm going to not be able to be in the same living situation I'm in. And I don't want to go move back with my parents. I want to try to figure out something else. But the deal that I'm in right now is so good that I'm almost going to have to take a cut in order to, you know, make it work out to something that's going to keep me from having to move back home. So, and it sucks. It's not a good feeling at all. So I'd say you need to make sure that you are in a situation where moving forward is very abundant. Like, you have way more money coming in than going out, so that you don't ever have to move backwards, because moving backwards is terrible.
It sucks, but it happens, right? Absolutely.
Can you speak to that at all? Do you have any instances where you've maybe had to, like, you accidentally overextended yourself too much, or you've had to, like, cut back, or you've caught yourself in some kind of habit?
Not many. I've actually been pretty blessed to not have to do that. But I have been to the point of where, like, oh, maybe I don't have to go to this gym membership, you know, monthly membership. I have my own weights. I got a pull-up bar. You know, I got a bench at my house. I don't have to travel for the gas money and the gym membership.
You gotta make it happen.
I don't need that.
Make it happen in the basement.
You don't need it. Like, if you can do squats and push-ups and pull-ups, like, you don't need it. Honestly, a lot of people think, like, they need that gym or the equipment or the machines and things like that. You don't. You really don't. If you just get off your ass and start to do squats and body weight exercises such as pull-ups and push-ups, you can be in pretty fantastic shape. But moving forward, that I got off on a tangent. Yeah, I have. I've had to stop. Like, I don't need this membership. I don't need the Netflix. I don't need this stuff. You know, I don't need the monthly stuff like that. And everything that is not a need but is a want, get rid of if you're struggling and you're worried about bills. You want to get to a position of where you're not worried about things. When you're worried about things, your mind is focused on what? Lack. You need to get out of the lack mindset and into the abundance mindset.
Yeah, here to circle it back around.
Circle it right back.
Gotta have the abundance mindset. Now you said something earlier, Matt, that was just spot on, and I think it really plays to how much you're in the abundance mindset. Now you said something along the lines of when you have money, you have to spend it like you don't have money. You remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So can you rephrase what you said real quick there?
Rich people, they realize that when you have money, you want to act like you're poor still. When you're rich, you don't go out and buy this Lamborghini yet, even though that's my dream and it's going to happen. You don't want to... It's going to happen. But you don't want to go out and act like, I'm going to buy all these crazy clothes, this gold, these watches, new car, all this stuff. Until you're making, $1 million a year, whatever, passively, residually. You want to act like you're poor. Why are rich people rich? Because they act like they're poor. They don't go out and spend on things that are unnecessary.
Here's a mind bender for you. Why are poor people poor? Because they act like they're rich.
Ooh. Amen. You got the people that are wearing these Gucci belts, $500, but they only have, $10 in their wallet. Because they're trying to look rich. I don't want to look rich. I want to be rich. Ooh. That was a good one. Just like the richest people in the world, right? Like Bill Gates and things like that, Mark Zuckerberg, they don't look rich, right? They're wearing just like a t-shirt and jeans. Steve Jobs always had that appeal.
Yes.
Like Steve, he didn't look, even though this guy has billions of dollars, this guy's wearing a turtleneck.
I heard a story about Steve Jobs before that he had his trademark black turtleneck and blue jeans, which was revolutionary in the business world to do blue jeans. But that was what he did. And that was just, the Steve Jobs thing. And so I guess, I don't remember exactly what kind of event it was, but he went up to a bouncer and the bouncer wouldn't let him in because the bouncer didn't think that he was dressed well enough. And he turned to the bouncer and he said, "You've made a big mistake," and walked away. And I don't know how the rest of that story plays out, but
I thought you were leading up to something that was crazy.
I thought I was.
I don't know what happened, but
no. I don't know. I don't remember the rest of the story right now. But it was like that just goes to how much of abundance mindset he was in, and how much of a vision that he had, because he was. He had made it. He was wearing a turtleneck.
He was at
blue jeans. He had made it. And then that other, the bouncer, I don't know what was going through his head, but he just was like, "Oh yeah, you're not dressed up enough." And boom, that was the end of that. Water.
Another great lesson right there is don't judge a book by its cover. Of course. You got to realize not everybody that wears all these fancy clothes are rich, and not everybody that dresses. Sometimes I like to dress poor, like ripped jeans, shirt, and stuff like that, even though there's money in the bank. Would you rather have $500 in your purse and a $10 purse, or would you rather have a $500 purse with $10 in your purse?
Well, I'd like to have a wallet. Rather than
I don't know why I said purse right out of the purse there.
That's something there, Haven.
I'm sorry.
I would way rather have the $10 wallet with $500 in it.
Damn right.
100% absolutely. Because that money is liquid.
Mm-hmm.
If you've locked it down into some kind of, liability, some kind of something that isn't liquid at all, a wallet, then you're locked into that wallet. You can't get your money out of that. So I would way rather have the liquid cash in the $10 cheapo. It could be Hello Kitty. I don't even care.
I don't care. That's another thing that I see a common trait in people is... We got a caller right now. We'll call him back.
Call him back.
That's a common trait that I see in rich people, though, is they don't care what other people think. They don't care what other people's opinions are. When you realize that I am abundant, I have the riches, I have the car.
You know, you're right. There's just almost this sense of...
I don't care.
Of just calmness. You know, like a sense of them being just okay. Oh boy, sorry. Just a sense of them being, like, okay with their situation. That they just don't even care what anyone else thinks. They don't even care really what anyone else has going on because they're so focused on what they've got going on and they're so content with...
They're happy.
Yeah, they're happy. They're just content and happy. And
when you make it to that point, in my experience, when you have enough money, thousands of dollars a month passively coming in every month, you're not worried about anything. Like, oh, I got a speeding ticket on the way. I don't care. I could pay that easily. Oh, I hit a mailbox. Oh, I could take care of that bumper on my car. No problem. I don't care. Oh, I need food. $100 in food. I don't care. It doesn't matter. You're just so much more relaxed. You're not worried about things. That's what the power of money can do. And a lot of people have this negative connotation towards money. They're like, ah, evil. Money. The root of all evil, right? Oh, money. Oh.
No, actually, absolutely not. Technically, it's the love of money that is the root of all evil.
That's right. Somebody commented on my Facebook post the other day, and I was like, you know, can you show me that excerpt from the Bible that says money is bad? And she quoted it, and it actually said that. It said the love
of money. Oh, it's so true. Yeah. Well, I mean, put it this way. If you're constantly chasing after money... There's an unlimited supply of money in the world. Therefore, you will never be satisfied. You will always be chasing, never be satisfied, and you will probably end up doing things that hurt and rip off other people for your own success. And that is toxic. That is toxic behavior you don't ever want to put somebody else down in order for you to get a leg up. Guys, life is so much better when it's a double win. You know, when you can help that person and lift them up, raise them up with you. You want to be in a group win situation. Don't step on people. Don't crush people. Don't do any of that kind of thing because it might be like, oh, cool, I got up on them for this time. But I guarantee you, that kind of behavior is going to come back and bite you in the butt. And it will just destroy.
It'll come back around.
Whatever you've got
like
going on.
Like attracts like. Thoughts become things. You're putting out that negative energy.
You always want to be in a double win situation. It has to be a double win.
Give them an example of
can't be ripping people off.
How can we, an example of a win-win? So they understand.
You threw me a curveball up there. I gotta come up with
a... Did I throw a curveball? I didn't mean to.
I don't know. Let's think here. What's a win-win situation?
What is a win-win situation?
Okay, I got an example.
You got
so,
one?
Specifically with you, Matt, how you come to me and you say, hey, I found this new company and it's got great returns. It has really nice... compliance, they're very compliance heavy. They're very, because that was the big issue with the other company that, you know, pulled the rug out from underneath us, so to speak. They
no names.
there's very lackey compliance going on in that thing. So this new company is very compliance focused and they're very compliance forefront. So he comes to me and he says, hey, I've got this thing. Check it out. If you like it, here's my link. Bada ba, bada bing, bada boom. And so that was a win-win situation because me signing up under him, you know, it's in the traditional network marketing type kind of thing. And so he gets a little kickback for me signing up. So that's a win for him. But then me having access to that opportunity is a win for me. So I would call that a win-win situation.
Well said. A lot of people have that negative connotation attached to network marketing and things like that too.
Oh boy, guys.
Yeah, you got to get over that.
Oh, man. Boy. Like, okay.
You got to be open-minded.
So, yeah, all right, I get it. Your Aunt Betty was screwed over by some network marketing company.
Tupperware bowls.
You know.
I didn't make it in any way.
Well, you, scam, you know, you're in Scamway or something, you know, going on. Like, I get it. I get it. I totally, totally get it. However, if you talk to some of the people that have the most money, they will say if you took it all the way, they would find a good network marketing company and start working. I don't remember exactly who said that, but I remember
a lot of people realize the opportunity, the leverage of network marketing, because you have leverage of a team that you're making percentages off of monthly.
And don't get me wrong, guys. You know, I hate talking to people. You know, if I'm gonna be real right now, I hate cold calling and going up to people and doing all that kind of, you know, I don't like that at all.
Feels icky. People don't like that.
I way prefer a, like you know, something that's working.
Get money
You
out.
Know, it, all right, obviously, if whatever kind of network marketing company you're in isn't working and the money isn't flowing, then you have a problem. So, you know, you want to be in the kind of network marketing company that's making you money. So then you go to people and say, hey, guys, this is awesome. It really worked out for me, and I think you might really like it too, and you can show them the numbers and lay it out and everything, and it can be a win-win situation for both parties.
For both parties. It doesn't have to be that weird, sketchy, ew, I'm trying to sell you something, used car salesman feeling.
It's so shiesty. It's so shiesty.
Let's switch gears here. Let's switch gears. Let's get some fresh...
Pushing the clutch.
New conversation.
Pushing the clutch. Shift the gear. All right. Let's let go of the clutch. What's your question?
All right. So, where do you see our U.S. economy as based on cryptocurrency, finance? Where do you see it in the next 10 years from now, Mr. Alexander Hayes?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I know currently.
I know currently
we're in a bubble. And a lot of people will be like, oh, we're not in a bubble. The economy's doing so great. We're in a bubble.
Look at the. We can't it goes up print.
What is it? Quantitative easing, or whatever? We can't print. And basically, for those of you who don't know, quantitative easing is a fancy word for printing money.
Printing money and lending out what the banks don't have.
And why that's bad, for those of you who don't, you know, really get it. It's like if you ever play Monopoly and you go get a second game of Monopoly and you start adding in money from that second game, and then everyone just has so much money that it devalues all of it. And you're like, whoa, you know, I've got all this money, and
it doesn't really, so
that's what quantitative easing is. But we've had like four freaking sessions of quantitative easing. They can't do it anymore. They can't devalue our money anymore. So at some point here, that bubble they've been artificially blowing up with this quantitative easing, like, oh, we've just got all this money and all this money.
It's gotta pop.
It has to pop.
It has to happen.
Me personally, I love this opportunity of cryptocurrency that we've got going on, because I really feel like a big switch could happen where it goes from this fiat, blown up, quantitative eased, you know,
inflated currency
to Bitcoin, which is technically nothing. If we're going to be serious here, it's just numbers on the screen. But it's backed up by a ledger that cannot be tampered with and is constantly being updated and is unhackable because of how it was coded in the first place. And I really, really, really like that idea. So I think we're at a very...
Called the blockchain.
It's blockchain. That's blockchain technology, which is what is behind Bitcoin. But we're at a very interesting point in human history, we are at a very interesting time where we could make this transfer from fiat currency into Bitcoin
to crypto.
It could really happen, and
I think in our lifetime we're going to see it.
Well, see, then that's the other thing that's like kind of scary, is because the Fed does not like Bitcoin at all because they can't control it. So they're like, oh, all right, if everyone's going to switch to a system that doesn't have books where we can just, you know, go fudge around the numbers and make trillions of dollars disappear.
You can't print more Bitcoin.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Once
you can print more U.S. dollars, they can just keep printing them off and
put
them into circulation.
Now, back in the day, they couldn't do that. Back when we were on the gold standard, every dollar related to gold, and I mean, you can't print more gold. That's just ridiculous. You have to go out
and we
find
went off
it.
This gold standard. All of a sudden, when was it in the Nixon era? If I am. Correct me if I'm wrong. If I'm remembering correctly. Nixon,
I think
Reagan,
it was Kennedy.
Something like that. I'm pretty sure
it
was Nixon.
Maybe it was Reagan.
Something like that.
We should have done research.
1967.
I'm pretty sure it was Reagan, and I'm pretty sure after he did it, he was like,
we need a computer.
Biggest regret.
I'm
yeah,
gonna
we need
get
a computer
and start. I'm going to bring that on my podcast.
We
got to
get a computer
so research.
So we can look this up.
Yeah, real time. Like YouTube videos. Research something that we're questioning, dates, things like that. Mm-hmm. That'll happen sooner or later. We're at the baby steps of my podcast right now. Nobody really understands that we just started this thing, and it's about to get huge. A lot of people need to. Yeah. Okay. Well, Mr. Alexander Hayes has to use a bathroom, so I'm going to continue. You just go do your thing. All right. So. The biggest difference that I see, listeners, between fiat and cryptocurrency is the anonymous nature of cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and things like that. Nobody's going to be able to track. You're all numbers on a screen. Let's say I send some Bitcoin to Alex. My computer is 11789, you know, like that. And then I'm sending my Bitcoin to 11786667. And that goes to Alex. But there's no names or things like that. You can't track it. You can see where it goes. And it's all going to be recorded on a open source ledger. Just basically bookkeeping of every transaction around the world kept by multiple different computers, servers. And that's what basically people ask me, Matt, you know, what is cryptocurrency mining? Mining is basically, in layman's terms, verifying transactions. So what you're doing is verifying, yes, this Bitcoin went to Mr. Alexander Hayes. And yes, it's real Bitcoin. It's confirmed on the blockchain. It is sent, and it is now in his wallet instead of mine. So that's the biggest thing. Anonymous, fast, cheaper transactions around the world. Welcome to cryptocurrency and blockchain. I'm just telling them the difference between fiat. Like I did a wire transfer for $1,500 to I forgot where it was. Uruguay or something like that. $1,500 to Uruguay, and it was like $50, $60 there and back.
That's
and I was
insane.
Like, this is ridiculous. And I sent like $1,000 of Bitcoin, it was like 20 cents.
Well,
it's
that's
like 50 cents.
That's the cool part. It's anywhere.
It's
any
global
wallet,
currency.
Anywhere, whatever.
It's not like US dollar, United States dollar. It's global currency that I
it's
can
cool.
send Bitcoin to Japan
it,
in
it,
10
it's
seconds.
Cool. Now, hold on. Now, what we're not saying, and at least I'm not saying this, I hope Matt isn't saying this, but what I'm definitely not saying is do not go take all of your savings and throw it into Bitcoin. Do not do that.
I have done that, but just don't do that.
Yeah. Don't. Remember, you have to be you have to be alert. You have to be smart. You have to have, you know, backup.
You
got to
be diversified.
You know,
you got to
have
a little bit of gold. Got to
oh
have a little bit
God.
Of U.S. dollars.
Speak to that.
Have a little bit of Bitcoin.
Speak to that for a second, Matt. The importance of diversifying, because. How diversified were you before that little company mishap happened?
I was pretty all in on Bitcoin and things like that, but I was lucky enough that I was withdrawing and liquidating some of my Bitcoin.
So in other words, going into it, you weren't really diversified at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of people learn the hard way.
Oh boy,
when you lose money, you learn. Oh boy, I shouldn't have had all my eggs in one basket, right?
Yeah. Oh boy,
the old cliche saying. That so many people tell you, but so many people don't follow. Don't keep all your eggs in one basket. And Easter just passed. Ha ha. Don't keep all your eggs in one basket.
If there's anything to take away from this, do not keep all your eggs in
one basket. Don't put all your money in one
basket.
In layman's terms.
Why you don't do that? Let's speak a little bit about why you don't do that. Because if the basket disappears and all of your eggs are gone, guys, that's bad.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and we know. Matt and I know. We just had to deal
with that. Well, now I have...
We just had to deal with that.
40 or 45 or more different cryptocurrencies. I have a little bit of gold.
No.
I have euros. I have some Great British pounds.
Yes.
And I have a bunch of U.S. dollars.
He's pretty heavy on the altcoins and the...
I just love
cryptocurrency. Other currency.
I really believe cryptocurrency and
like
blockchain
that.
Is going to take off.
I am not.
I'm
in. Oh, I believe too. I just didn't see. It's cool because we have this duality. You know, you had more disposable incomes. You had more money that you were able to like shuffle around to different things. I wasn't in a situation where I could intelligently take advantage of, you know, some of these altcoin opportunities. I had to say no, which is unfortunate because I didn't have a whole lot of savings, you know. So I had to be really, really smart about it, and I had to, you know, only take opportunities that were going to be like more of a close range guaranteed type of, you know, growth scheme rather than, boy, hope this goes up.
Income producing assets. Which basically means you're going to put money into something that's going to pay you daily, weekly, or monthly.
I've got a question for you, Matt.
What is your question,
Mr. Is your house an asset?
Oh, boy. This is such a big, controversial topic. And I've asked this question on Facebook to my Facebook friends. And me, personally, I don't believe, in my definition, that a house is an asset. Unless you're renting it out for Airbnb and making a positive cash flow monthly, daily, weekly, or whatever. Because in my definition, an asset is something that pays you, not costs you money.
I would 100% agree. And that's unfortunate because that's super counter to what, like, you know,
it's counterintuitive
people,
to what society says.
Yeah, what society is like, oh, you know, go buy some car, buy a car, that's an asset,
buy a house, that's an asset.
Well, to double back on something that I said before, you know, if you get stuck in a kind of situation where you've got this car payment, you've got this mortgage payment, and you're stuck going paycheck to paycheck, is that really an asset? No, it's a liability because you're paying for it. And I don't really understand why. For some people, that is such a hard concept to grasp. No, an asset, and here's my definition. It's very similar to Matt's. An asset is anything that puts money in your pocket. I don't care what that is. Anything at all. If you want to just come up with some, like, app store digital game thing and just invent, you know, something that's going to pay you money, like with the microtransaction thing that's common in all the video games right now. If you want to come up with something like that, as long as it pays you money, it's an asset. The second that you have to upkeep it and pay for it, liability.
I agree. I try not to invest in anything that rusts, rots, or depreciates.
Oh, that's good. Say that again.
Don't invest in anything that rusts, rots, or depreciates. And
rusts,
that's one of the that's not me. That's a big lesson that I've learned from mentors and a lot of other people that have millions of dollars and more than I have. Don't invest in anything that rots, rusts, or depreciates in value. Basically, a home, a car, clothes, stupid things you don't need right now. Yeah, I love those things. You know why I gotta be rich, Alex? Because I love expensive shit.
It's.
But just, you gotta have self-control,
right? Okay, alright.
Until you're making millions.
So the shirt that I'm wearing right now is of a higher quality than a shirt that I would normally buy. And I got it off of a, you know, like subscription service kind of thing. So I didn't pay full price for the shirt I'm wearing. But it's so soft. I have to tell you, it is so nice. And it's just like one of those things.
Where are we going here?
It's just one of those things that, like, you know, quality products that are sometimes more, you know, a lot of people say, oh, a shirt's a shirt. Yeah, you know,
depends
some
on
shirts
where
are soft
shirt.
And fantastic. So,
and everybody's,
you know,
definition is different. Everybody's perception is different.
But I would say I have a very similar perception to you. I enjoy quality. Quality is
I like
nice
stuff, yeah. And what, so many people have this poor mindset.
Try to speak to this like the idea of like quality stuff being bad. Can you speak to that at all?
Elaborate.
You know, because
there's quality stuff.
I feel like I meet so many people who are just like, oh, wealth is bad. You know, having money is bad. You know, having you know, being well off is bad. Why do you think that is? Where does that come from?
That comes from our parents, our generations that raised us. Every knowledge that we've ever acquired, all the knowledge that we've acquired since we were born, since we came out of the womb, we were taught about lack. Unless you were raised in, you know, a millionaire's family. You were taught, you see on TV, advertisements, you see lack. And I don't know.
I have another view.
Yeah, go for it.
I feel it's the society that we're in. I feel as though the current society that we're in
so many
is against.
Don't have money.
Well, I feel as though it's against wealth and it's against people who have money.
What did we read earlier? Me and Alex were in Barnes and Noble's, right? One of my favorite places.
Oh, it's great.
My first favorite place, right? Bank. Second favorite place, Barnes and Noble's. So
Bank,
I was reading
Barnes.
A book, yeah, and it said. It said the top 1% have 96%
yeah,
of all the money.
I remember
in the world.
Wasn't too sure where you were going with
the
this.
The top
but yeah.
1% have 96% of the wealth in the world.
Do you think that's wrong?
I think it's close.
I would agree that is.
I think it's very close.
Probably.
It's pretty sad.
No, I don't. I'm sorry. I don't mean wrong like incorrect statistic. I mean wrong like morally.
Morally wrong that we have all this suffering on Earth and we don't do something about it, even though we have the means, even though that top 1% has the ability to change this, to change it overnight. I mean, you give away half of what they have, billions and trillions of dollars. Maybe we can start feeding everybody, you know, farms. Pure water, electricity, and like Elon Musk is doing right now, global Wi-Fi.
Yeah, he just got approved for SpaceX to do the satellite Wi-Fi thing. That's all I know about that. I just know he got approved to do it, and that's
incredible,
awesome.
Which basically means the entire world is.
So
going to
I want to shuffle back really quick to this
go
the
for
idea
it.
Of. I've been saying that a lot. Shuffle. I wonder where that came from. But
I'm going to shuffle back.
At any rate, we're going to take it back now, y'all.
Take it back now, y'all. Two claps this time. Hands on your knees. Hands on your knees. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
anyway.
Okay.
Anywho.
All right. We're gonna back.
Anywho.
So I want to go back to the U.S. dollar being in a bubble.
Yes.
So if it is in a bubble... and it crashes. These are Robert Kiyosaki's 5 G's of what you want to acquire.
Let's hear it.
In order to be
stable.
In, you know, safe. In,
safe.
In the, this
during
is,
a
this
recession.
This is in a scenario if everything just totally breaks
shit
out.
Shit hits the fan.
Yeah. This is what you want to have going on. All right. So here's the list. Gold... gasoline, grounds, grub, and guns.
Grounds meaning land?
Yes. Okay. Land.
Why is guns on the... Just in case zombies or people try to take my food?
Yeah, you got to be able to defend your family. You have to be able to defend your grub.
Yeah, that's like
you
have to be able to defend.
I know. It
is worst case scenario. We need guns.
However, I'd rather prepare for a worst case scenario and not have it happen than not prepare for a worst case scenario and have it happen.
Of course, like my mother used to always say, my parents, they always taught me, you know, I'd rather have more than enough and not need it than need it and not have it.
Exactly. So obviously gold, you know, gold is a pretty solid store of money that
value,
regardless
store
of
value,
it's a good store of value that it's always going to be precious.
Because always. That's just it's been around for thousands and thousands and thousands of years.
It's gold.
People
that's
are
what
always
it is.
Going to realize gold as a store of value.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's
regardless
what
of what people say.
Gasoline is important because you can run generators.
Because generators.
You can run cars. You can have access to electricity.
We have.
You want to have gasoline. Grounds are important. Because you need somewhere to put all your stuff. You know, yeah. You got to have land.
All our earthly possessions. Got to have
somewhere to store
our shit.
Grub. You know, food. You need food. Otherwise, everything else is useless. And then guns, obviously, because worst case scenario, you might need to defend your stuff.
Might have to defend what you have.
Yeah.
Might have to kill some zombies.
You know, hopefully not.
Kill some Nazis.
Hopefully not. But like we were saying, I'd rather be prepared than not.
Of course. I'd rather have it, not need it, than need it and not have it. Amen. Mm-hmm. My brother, what else do you want to give the listeners today? What have you learned? Oh, I got a good question.
All right, let's hear it.
What is the best lesson that your parents have ever bestowed to you? Your mother and father.
Oh, man.
And that's not an easy job. That's a hard job raising a human being.
And that's a hard question.
Thank you. That's
a hard question. That's a good question. That's a hard question. You know, this is going to sound really off the wall, but it's like it's. You know, I think the best thing that they ever did was an example of what marriage should look like. And I know that's like totally like not what we were talking about at all and not what was going on at all. But they have like just such this like just great relationship that frankly nowadays you don't really see. You know, I see so many broken families. I see so many, you know, divorced parents. What have you, kids are messed up because of that, because they weren't raised correctly or whatever. And I can't relate to any of that because my parents have such a good, solid relationship that, you know, it's really hard for me to not strive for anything other than that. So I think, you know, I think the best thing that they did that I grew up watching was just this awesome relationship between them.
Mm.
So
communication.
There you go.
Relationship. Great answer.
How about you?
How
about your parents? What was the best thing that they ever
bestowed
upon you?
My parents have always taught me, you know, make money with your brain instead of your body.
Ooh.
Don't work.
Ooh, that's good.
Right? Especially my father, which I've just been incredibly blessed sometimes. And you forget how blessed you are sometimes with your day-to-day routine, in and out, doing the same old things. But I've been blessed with a father that has worked his body, and you realize, I don't want to do that. I don't want... You know, to be hurting, aching, you know, in pain and things like that to make money. Because I've realized we can make money without backbreaking work and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and my
yeah.
parents have always taught me great things about money. They've taught me, you know, how not to use credit cards. Like, don't go out and spend what you don't have.
Oh,
Pay
yeah.
off your bill every single month. Mm-hmm. If you don't have it, don't buy it.
Yeah. And I can relate a lot to that kind of thing. It was definitely always a situation like, you know, don't ever, you know, spend what you don't have. Always pay off every month. That was a big one. Every single month.
It's a good
month.
One. And pay we weren't even taught. Credit cards. We weren't taught this stuff. We weren't taught taxes, credit, housing, mortgage,
here's cars. A big question for you. How much did you learn about money in school?
I learned 10% of what I now know about our financial system, how it works, how money works, how the game, quote unquote,
oh,
works.
Oh boy. They don't want you to know this, guys. They don't want you to be learned.
It's such a piss-poor society. Education.
It's so bad.
So sad. But
really
we are here. Our generation is here, I believe, to change this, to tell people how it works, to start showing people it's possible to live your dreams, to make money doing what you love instead of something that you hate.
I mean, guys, you got access to the internet in
we
your
have the
pocket.
Internet. There are no excuses.
Unlimited information about anything a couple of taps away on your phone.
Unlimited opportunity.
Yes. Yeah. Seriously. That is a real thing. We are in that world right now. And so many people, and I'm totally guilty of this too. I don't want to be like just blaming other people. For,
yeah,
I'm totally
yeah.
guilty of this too. Well, let's open
how
up
do
my
we
phone
get to this point?
And get on Facebook. You know,
how do we get to this knowledgeable point? How do we get to this wisdom? Because we've been through it. Because we've done the stupid things and we've realized, hey, this is not how it actually works. Hey, I've spent money I don't have. This is how the game of money works.
You know. Earlier tonight, I was scrolling down Facebook on my phone for no reason, and Matt looks at me and goes, "Dude, get off your phone!
Get off your phone!" Bro.
And that totally resonated with my soul. I don't know if he knows that, but that totally you hit a spot that was just like, ah, oh, dang
shit!
Have to get off this phone. I gotta be
that's
present
another huge thing isn't
in
it?
The moment
we
I gotta
are not
be
present
focused.
You know how many people I look to my left, I'm driving, I look to my left and I see this girl on her phone driving, texting. You know how many people do that?
Yeah,
I look to my right, people are on
today,
their phone.
It happened.
We're in the bowling alley, we're with friends in person, with good friends, and we see people
and
on their phones.
And there's Alex sitting down looking at his phone, you know, like there it is. You know, we're guilty of it too. So,
way to be honest.
Mean, it was like an example that I had earlier, a little bit before that, we got the chance to draw on a ceiling tile, which was just totally random. Like,
yeah.
How did we even, like,
at this
you know,
bar, they have the ceiling yeah, tiles. And
it was great. They were replacing their ceiling tiles with ones that people had drawn on. And so we had this moment to draw on a ceiling tile. And I got so focused. I got so, like,
we were
engaged.
And tell them what you wrote. Tell them what you wrote down.
Honestly, well, before I say that, before, you know, anything, I was, like, writing and focused and in the moment and everything. I forgot I had a phone. You know, I was so, like, present and so in the moment and so about coloring. I mean, first of all, you had to freaking dodge, like, every hole possible on that thing. It was not a good surface.
It was not a clean surface,
it was flat surface. It was bad, but I just really enjoyed that. So what I wrote on it, and I've said this before, always be hustling.
Always be hustling.
And what that means is always be working toward your dream. You know, I don't care if you've got a really crappy job that you hate, you know, you've got, you know, whatever you got going on. I guarantee you there's something that you can learn from that job that you don't like that you can use for your future towards whatever dream you've got going on. So I say that to you, to everybody, always be hustling. And that term is pretty cool. It came up from a job that I had down over in Philadelphia. It was a convention that I went to, and there was this guy who came up to me, and I don't know if you know this, but at conventions, it's a big deal to have pins. You know, they're like just pins that reference different mm-hmm. things. And people have hundreds of pins. And it's all about, like, trading the pins. And different pins have different values. And so this dude comes up to me and he's like, "Oh, man, I literally just got into this market, like, earlier today, and I've learned ins and outs of everything about this whole market. He's like, man, you just got to always be hustling. And then that became our catchphrase for the whole rest of the weekend, was always be hustling. And I brought that back, and I bring it to you guys now, to always be working on your dreams and always be hustling.
Man, that is such a great phrase. I loved it the first time you told it to me. I loved it. Hashtag always be hustling. Be hustling. Baby. Yeah. Well, let's end it on that.
That's a good place to end.
That's a great, what a great podcast. So many nuggets of wisdom for the audience, the listeners. I hope people love this.
Now, Robert Kiyosaki always says this, go back, listen to it again, because you're going to catch things that you didn't catch the first time. And that's so true.
So true.
Just me thinking back about all the nuggets that are in this. I can't even wait to listen to this when this is published and I can listen to it and learn from different nuggets that Matt's given me or whatever. Go back, listen to it twice, go through it. I guarantee you, you're going to pick up more things the second time through than the first time. You know, share it with a friend. Show it to somebody. You know, you got someone in your life that you like. Say, hey,
check this out. We got Real Talk Radio.
Let's talk about it. Real Talk Radio.
Real Talk, baby. You like? It was Real Talk, and then I was like, oh, well, radio's an R. Real Talk Radio.
Real Talk Radio. No, that's
good. RTR, baby. I loved it.
RTR. I love that.
Hashtag. Real Talk. Thank you. I hope this is going to take off. People are going to love this. We're going to try and add as much value as possible and hopefully change people's lives. Even if this is one person that listens to this,
guys, that dude changes their life. If it's just one person listening and it changes your life, that's worth it. One person. That's all it takes.
My man. And that is a wrap, my friend. Thank you, Mr. Alexander Hayes.
Thank you so much, I appreciate Matt. Thank you.
Real Talk Radio. Hopefully the listeners loved it as well. I hope to see you again.
RTR.
Catch you freaks later.
Woo!